providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Welcome back, continuing to listen to the first hour of the weekend edition. I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments that I spent with Rick Rule. It had been a while since I had Rick back on the show, but always interesting to see how he's viewing the metals market and more or less what's going on around the world. In this segment, I am introducing a new guest to the show. His name is Luis Garcia. He is the founder of the blog called High Grade by Economic Alpha. Economic Alpha is his Twitter handle. And I've been following Luis on Twitter for a number of years now, as he's provided some very good insights on specific companies and generally the resource sector. Luis, I first just want to introduce you by getting a general comment on the gold market. You focus on resources, but even more so on precious metals and gold. Can you outline some of the major drivers behind what's going on in gold right now and where you think gold stands in terms of an investment, please?
Sure. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. You know, the gold market right now is very interesting. Parallels to 2016, I think. For one, in 2016, the Fed paused, and it caused a significant rally in the price of gold. But back then, the price of gold was much lower. It was sub 1,100, I believe, if I recall correctly. This time around, three years later, we have a scenario where the Fed again has paused, and a lot of speculation is in the market right now that the Fed's next move could be not a hike, but rather a cut. So that's somewhat transformational. And so what I think where we stand right now, we're still in a very large trading range. Obviously, we're now at the higher end of that trading range. The trading range that I'm specifically referencing is the 1050 low and the 1370 high that we've been in for such a long time here. But I find it interesting that the parallels of 2016 are very similar, with the biggest difference being that I think the market is pricing in the end of the rate hike cycle. Whereas in 2016, hindsight's 2020, obviously, but that was really only a pause in the hike cycle. It went on to further continue, and so gold just kind of stayed in a trading range. But we're now $50 away from a level where if gold can break on a daily, weekly, and monthly closing basis, it'll get very interesting really fast.
Yeah, you outlined some good facts about where the Fed stands right now, and it's something that Chris Temple and I chatted about a lot over the week on Wednesday and Thursday specifically. But as you mentioned, gold has been in this trading range ever since 2013. You can argue that it's a long basing formation because we have been building out of that low that was put in at the tail end of 2015, but we still haven't gotten that breakout. Do you think just enough of the Fed pausing and continuing a pause throughout this year that can drive gold to finally break out of that pretty staunch resistance around 1370 to 1380?
Yeah, I hate using the or despise using the word this time is different, but it just seems to me that this time may be actually different. You know, we have a lot of different drivers this time around. We've got an economic cycle that is approaching or well beyond now 10 years. It's one of the longest economic cycles that we have been. And also real interest rates, a big driver in the price of gold. And actually the value of the dollar has been really struggling. You can kind of see gold in other currencies rallying significantly. And that's often a sign, especially when gold in other currencies are close to or nearing highs, for example, in the Australian dollar and also in the Canadian dollar, commodity currencies. We're not too far off from all-time highs in those respective currencies. And for the most part, in my view, the alternative currencies outside of the dollar typically rally first. And then the dollar, as the dollar starts to weaken, catches up from a gold price perspective. One of the other things too, and this has been well known, it's not new this year, but there was an article by the World Gold Council that was actually put out today that central bank gold buying has been the highest it's been in 50 years. The demand is there. It's not going away. So certainly, you know, this time around, you know, it's the product is difficult to value because it's very psychological, and that's why you have to focus on the technicals in addition to everything else to sort of see where the price can go from here.
I completely agree. Looking at the charts is crucial, and I know talking to a lot of the generalist investors, they're still waiting for that breakout to put more money into, or to put any money into the sector, which is a major driver when that does happen. Let's also talk about some stocks, but more stocks on a broad sense, because as I said, you follow a number of different, which I even believe are high quality stocks. The argument can be made that the stocks are still relatively lagging the overall gold price. As close as gold is to breaking out, the stocks still have, if you just judge it by GDX or GDXJ, still a lot of work to do to the upside. What are your comments about the general underperformance in terms of the stocks compared to what gold's been doing?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the issues in the mining sector are not entirely related to the price of gold. You know, unfortunately, a lot of the bad decisions that were made leading up to the gold price peak, with buying assets at extraordinarily high valuations. I mean, let's face it, it's predominantly a cyclical industry for the most part. And, you know, the worst decisions in the cycle were made towards the end of the peak. And so a lot of folks are still working off those excesses. We're starting to see signs of change, though. Companies are starting to merge. The idea that the mining sector is just very fragmented. There's so many mining companies out there, some with just one property, some with just two, some with just hopes of having a property. There's just so many different mining companies out there. You know, the top three to four mining companies, you know, they don't own a majority of the mines out there. So it's a very, very fragmented sector. And so consolidation, especially in an environment where gold might actually be working to move higher, is very positive. But I think a lot of the lagging mining stocks have to do with just time passing by since the mistakes were made in the past. You know, it's interesting because there aren't many mining companies that are profitable at this gold price, if you look at it from a free cash flow perspective. And that's really what generates value, because it's very capital intensive sector. A lot of capital needs to be used to sustain the mines, but then you also need capital to explore and find reserves, because eventually if you don't find reserves, you're going to deplete them or you have to buy something. And so at this point in the cycle, $1,300 gold is getting better, but a lot of mining companies still aren't generating free cash flow, or if they are, it's not substantial enough to really put a fire in the industry.
Hey, I completely agree. I think one thing that you're really getting at is the fact of the matter is there's still a lot of mismanaged companies out there and a lot of companies that don't even have a whole lot of hope in them. It's unfortunately something that I saw at some of these recent conferences is that the good companies are few and far between, but there are some good companies out there, which takes us to kind of your investment strategy. It's something I find very interesting, something I've learned more about chatting with you off mic, and that deals with really focusing on a smaller number of companies that meet a pretty defined criteria. You're not necessarily looking for those high risk exploration companies. You look at these companies more from a fundamental business perspective. Can you share some of the highlights and some of the key factors you look at when analyzing companies?
Sure. So as I just stated, the sector is so fragmented that there are so many different mining companies out there. And sometimes it's overwhelming. We see GDX and GDXJ and how they have really underperformed poorly. Even when compared to the price of gold, they have just underperformed poorly. And that to me means that, you know, there's just too many mining companies and even fewer that are actually investable mining companies. Sure, if the price of gold enters a bull market, mining companies are going to rise. They're leveraged to the price of gold, and so they're really call options to a higher gold price. But the way I looked at it was, if I wanted exposure to the price of gold, I could either buy the metal itself, or I could buy call options to the price of gold, or futures, or whatever the case may be, to get that leverage. I don't really need to be in the mining sector. So when I looked at the mining sector as a whole, I realized to myself, if I'm going to invest in the sector, I want to rule out the price of gold from the beginning. And that's how I started my process. So really what I look for is a junior company that has potential to grow in the next 3 to 5 years, that has more than one asset so that I don't have a single asset mine risk, that can generate or is currently generating free cash flow to fund exploration, in other words, future growth and resources, that has a solid management team, one that has had success in the past at other companies in making money, and a company that has a proven track record and that has management skin in the game. So those are kind of the high-level things that I look at. So at any given time, I may only be looking at 3 to 5 mining companies that I think are legitimate investments. And then the rest of them, to me, are just, speculative leverage trades on gold, which is fine, too, because I don't mind buying a mining stock that is going to double if the price of gold does really well. But that price doubling may never necessarily mean that that's what it's worth. Obviously, if you sell it after it doubles, then that's great. But a lot of times they double and maybe even triple. And they may not ever produce a mine or may never even produce an ounce of gold. And so that's why I'd rather focus on 5% of the industry and 95% of the rest I just trade.
I think that's a great strategy and one that I think many investors in this junior sector could learn from. It also would, I think, help to clear out some of these companies that don't really have a whole lot going for them that seem to somehow be able to raise small amounts of money just to keep the lights on. You did recently post an update on Atlantic Gold Corp on your website. That is economicalpha.blog. I will direct everybody to your website to read over that nice encompassing write-up that you have there on Atlantic. Are there any other companies that are catching your eye in that small selection of companies that you focus on?
Yeah, I mean, I've been pretty open about Wesdome and what they're doing there with the Eagle River asset, financing their future growth plans. Not only do you have an asset in Ontario that is currently generating free cash flow, but it's high grade and it's paying for the growth in the asset in Val-d'Or in Kiena. And what I like about Kiena is the prospective nature of the property. They have hit some really high grade drill results that are significantly different than what was ever mined there. And that to me is an eye-opening feature and one that I think is going to lead to the restart of that mine, increase in reserves and resources, higher grade, and a mine that I think can be in production for a very long time. So it fits my strategy. I will say that I had purchased Wesdome in May at $155 US to Canadian, and it has since gone significantly higher. So I'm sitting on a nice, decent profit on that one. It has run quite a bit. There's, I believe, still more value to create there. And I'm long on that name.
All right, Lewis, we are going to wrap it up there, but it's been great introducing you and having you on our show. I'm sure that I will be having you back on a more regular basis to discuss some more of the companies that you are liking and some more thoughts on the general market. Again, if anybody wants to check out Lewis's site, that is economicalpha.blog. I will also post a link in the weekend show posting. And if anybody has any questions for Lewis and you want him to look into any companies or any other topics regarding the precious metals, please just email me, fleck@kereport.com. Lewis, thanks again for your time and have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too. Thanks for having me on. I'll be more than happy to come back.